to this doubleheader baseball broadcast brought to you direct from Comiskey Park by permission of the Chicago White Sox and the Boston Red Sox to stimulate interest in our national game and in your local team. And now out to Comiskey Park and Hal Totten, who's going to give us some inside information on today's games right from the playing field. Take it, Hal Totten.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon from Comiskey Park, the home of the White Sox of Chicago, where the White Sox and Boston Red Sox are concluding their present four-game series with a doubleheader this afternoon with at least 30,000 people already in the park and some more coming on. The young lady's been taking pictures all week here of ball players, and as each one goes through, he has to sign up now, sign his own picture. She's going to have quite a collection when she gets to this. Donkey, sign it right across the face? No, not quite. This afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, is another one of those days that, well, we haven't got that. All right, Lucius, take care of that fella Affleck for me. Well, he's in the way. Clear sunshine and hot, a little warmer than it has been in the past, and the wind is a little unsteady. One minute it's from the north, next minute from the east, next minute from the south, and you never know just what's going to come next. This afternoon, I really haven't arranged anything here. I'm going to sort of take this fellow with very little warning because he just happens to be sitting right here taking a look at the field and resting up after one of the best pitching jobs we've seen all year yesterday. And that's Bill Dietrich, a young man who was new to the White Sox in a White Sox uniform, but who has given them many bad moments in other uniforms in the last couple of years. And Bill, if you don't mind, as I say, this is sort of without warning, would you say a word or two and I ask you a couple of questions?
I sure will.
I'd like to know this first. How long have you been in the game? Did you go right, start right in with the A's?
Yeah, I started in 31. I was farmed out 3 years. I was 31, 32, and 33. Then 34 and 35, I was with the Athletics, and then I, this is my third change this year already.
Well, see, you were the Athletics, and then where'd you go?
Washington.
To
I went to Washington. I was only there about 18 days, and I was sent here.
Oh, I see. And how do you like the change?
Oh, this is the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I've wanted to come here, be with Jimmy for 2 or 3 years and never been able to do it, and I was sure pleased when I did get the chance to come here.
Then you fellas around the circuit really feel the way about, same way about Jimmy, the fans here do, is that right?
Well, he's the greatest fellow in the game today to me and most of the boys who play for him.
Well, I think the fans would be glad to hear that. We've felt that way, but it's very hard sometimes to get ball players to say that right out in so many words.
Sure.
Especially those that have been here any length of time. Well, Bill, when you were with the, where did you come from to the A's? Did you come right out of school?
High school, yeah. I graduated from high school in 1930.
In Philly?
Philadelphia.
And then went right with them, and now you're with the White Sox. You really think that you've got the club you like to be with, right?
Finally got here, yeah.
Been trying for 3 years.
Been trying for 3 years and finally made it.
Well, outside of the fact that Jim's such a great fellow to be around, what's the attraction to this ball club out here?
Well, they got a swell bunch of ball players, and I think within the next 2 years they're going to be a very dangerous pennant contender. And I think with the Muddy Rule, who has helped me tremendously since I've been here, and with a catching of Sewell, who I think is the best receiver in the league, I think it's a great and a bit of encouragement for a young pitcher to come here and pitch.
We'll do with you out there in the bullpen. I saw him when you first came to the club, and I suppose you did it on the road, too. I see him take you out there in the bullpen and work with you sometimes 3 or 4 innings.
Yeah, he really tears you apart. He tells you every bad fault you got. And no matter what kind of a game you pitch, the next day he'll call you aside and tell you how really terrible you were.
In other words, you might win, but he lets you know that you're lucky in some respects.
That's the idea.
You don't get a little bit smug.
No.
Did he do any changing with you? Because I know before you came here, your control was supposed to be a little bad.
Well, he found it the first day I was here. He found out that I was gripping the ball very tightly, and he made me loosen up my grip, and I don't know, I can't say yet because I've only been in these 2 games, but I think that might have been the cause of my trouble all along.
You seem to feel easier out there now.
Oh,
I notice that you're not trying to steer the ball anymore at all.
No.
You're just throwing it.
I feel great.
Well, that's the answer. Isn't that strange? A fellow like that will take one look and find that out. Although I think I've heard Muddy make that same statement to 2 or 3 pitchers. For instance, he's loosened Kennedy's grip.
Kennedy, he was telling me.
And he's worked on a couple of fellows to loosen their grip. Most pitchers, I guess, young pitchers get an idea you got to grip that ball too tight.
Well, then they're trying a little hard, you know, to make good and everything, and they want to grab it and throw it as quick as they get it.
And he goes out there and takes one look and starts loosening you up.
That's right.
Well, I think it's a doggone good idea. I'm especially happy that you're happy to be here because you've got the loyalists gang of fans here in the south side of Chicago, I think, of any club in the whole world. I say that being a Chicagoan now, but I came originally from the east, and I've seen them all around the circuit. And this gang, you didn't see an awful lot of this ball club during the years when it was in last place, but, you know, we had days like this one Sunday after another, 20,000 people out here, 30,000 for a tail-end ball club, so you're going to have a lot of fun friends for you through here.
Yeah,
your home still in Philly, Bill?
Yeah, I live in Philly. I've made my home there all my life.
You married or single?
I'm married.
Got a family?
I have one child, 19 months old.
Well, boy or girl?
Boy.
Boy, well, he'll be another ball player coming along. Just about the time you are ready to hang up the glove, well, he'll be about ready. Boy.
Yes, he will.
Well, that's all. Well, thanks a lot, Bill. Our fans wanted to meet you, and I wanted to chat with you. And I do like to catch you fellas sort of unawares this way. Then you're more natural, because some of these fellas, you warn them a day ahead of time. By the time you get them in front of the mic, they're so nervous they don't know what they're going to say. Although I don't think you would. Thanks a lot. Bill Dietrich, the new pitcher of the White Sox, who did that grand job yesterday holding this very valuable and expensive Red Sox team to two hits and coming out, as you well know, very much on top. Now for the ball game, the lineups for the first game. For Boston, Cook, right. Kramer, center. Manush, left. Fox, first. Kroner, second. Cronin, short. Werber, third. Berg, catching. And West Farrell, pitching. For the White Sox, Radcliffe, left. Kravitz, center. Haas, right. Ted Lyons has been laying for Mo Berg ever since he went upstairs to dry off, and Mo found him waiting for him down here in the runway, and he came a shooting out of this runway like there was a great big animal back there or something. And go on with that White Sox lineup. We started to get a Radcliffe left, Haas right, Lenora first.
Russell picked the first one?
Well, so it is. Russell's warming up there. Well, then correct the Boston lineup. The pitcher, somebody told me earlier, one of the players, that West was going to do the first game. He'll probably pitch the second then instead. We'll finally get into this White Sox lineup if you'll be carefully patient, we might say. The White Sox lineup we gave you down through Hawson. Benora first and Appling short. Hayes second. Dykes third. Sewell catching. And Kane pitching. The umpires will be Ormsby at the plate, Hubbard at first, and McGowan at third. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the umpires will probably be out here in a few minutes. There's a big crowd here today and a lot of people still coming in. So I imagine my smart move would be to start upstairs as soon as I can so I can get through there and be up there when this game gets underway so we don't miss any pitches. So with that in mind, I will now look up toward the booth, wig-wag with my small finger, whereupon George will turn a dial or ring a bell or just do nothing, which he does very well, too. And we'll have a switch to the studio, and then we'll catch you again from up there when we get there. So while I'm on the way up there, how about a switch to the studio, George?
Here's good news that will gladden your heart as a motorist. A new kind of motor oil that puts more miles between the quarts you have to buy is on sale at all Texaco stations. It's the new Texaco motor oil, made by the furfural process. Furfural is a special refining material that gives an oil a stronger, tougher lubricating film. A film that resists burning up inside the engine. It keeps the crankcase full longer because it is all lubricant. Gum-forming elements and all other non-lubricating materials have been removed. Ask for the new Texaco motor oil with the exclusive furfural film at any Texaco station. Change now to this entirely new oil that provides greater engine protection for a longer time. And while Hal Totten's making that trip up to the booth to bring you this afternoon's baseball game from Comiskey Park between the Boston Red Sox and the Chicago White Sox, we'll give you the schedule of the other games to be played and the scores that have come in so far this afternoon. First, over in the National League, in Boston, the Chicago Cubs are playing a doubleheader against the Bees this afternoon. The first game has already started, and at the end of the first half of the fourth inning of the first game in Boston between the Cubs and the Bees, the Cubs lead 1-0. Lee and Hartnett are working for the Cubs, the Bees using McFadden and Lopez. In Philadelphia, the St. Louis Cardinals play a doubleheader against the Phillies. At the end of the second inning of the first game, the Cardinals are leading the Phillies 6-0. Keene and Davis, the St. Louis Cardinal battery, the Philadelphia Phillies starting Walters and Wilson, with Jorgen taking over in the third inning. In that game, Martin of the Cardinals started that 6-run lead in the second inning when he had a home run with two men on base. All 6 of the Cardinal runs were made in the first half of the second inning. In Brooklyn, the Cincinnati Reds are playing a doubleheader ball game against the Dodgers. At the end of the first half of the first inning, the Reds are leading the Dodgers 2-0. Stein and Lombardi, the Red battery, Mungo and Berries working for the Dodgers. In New York, the Giants are taking the Pittsburgh Pirates on in a single game. That game has not started. It will start about 2:30 our time. And now over to the American League. In St. Louis today, the Browns take on the Philadelphia Athletics. No batteries and no scores on that game, as it will start about 2 o'clock our time. That's going to be a doubleheader ball game between the Browns and the Philadelphia Athletics. In Cleveland, the Indians engage the New York Yankees in a single game. And in Detroit, the Tigers take on the Washington Senators, also a single game. The game at Comiskey Park, of course, is a doubleheader ball game between the Chicago White Sox and the Boston Red Sox. To repeat for you the batteries on that game, to which you'll listen in just a few moments, the Red Sox are starting Russell as the pitcher, Berg as the catcher, the White Sox using Kane and Sewell. And now for a look at the standings of the clubs in both leagues. First, the National League, the Chicago Cubs are in first place. Second place is held by the St. Louis Cardinals. They're 2 games behind. Third place is the New York Giants. Fourth, the Pittsburgh Pirates. Fifth, the Cincinnati Reds. Sixth, the Boston Bees, whom the Cubs are playing this afternoon. Seventh, the Philadelphia Phillies. And in last position, the Brooklyn Dodgers. In the American League, first place is held by the New York Yankees. Second place by the Cleveland Indians, whom the Yankees are playing this afternoon. Third place, the Boston Red Sox, who are out at Comiskey Park playing the White Sox. Fourth place, the Detroit Tigers. Then fifth place, the Chicago White Sox. Sixth place, the Washington Senators. And in seventh position, the St. Louis Browns, who are playing the eighth position, Philadelphia Athletics in St. Louis this afternoon in a doubleheader ballgame. And now for the standings of the leaders in home run hits scored so far this year. In first position, Lou Gehrig of the Yankees has had 33 home runs so far this year. In second position, uncontested, all by himself, Trotsky of the Cleveland Indians with 31, 2 home runs behind Lou Gehrig. In third place, Jimmy Fox of the Red Sox with 30. Fourth place, Mel Ott of the Giants, 21. In fifth place, tied for fifth place, Averill of the Indians and Camilli of the Phillies with 20. Dickey of the Yankees has had 18. Klein of the Phillies has had 18. Berger of the Bees, 17. DiMaggio of the Yanks, 16. Goslin of the Tigers, 16. Johnson of the Athletics, 16. Medwick of the Cardinals, 15. Selkirk of the Yanks, 14. Also, Jay Moore of the Phillies, 14. Demery of the Cubs, 13. Goodman of the Reds, 12. And the following men have had 11. Oh, correction, Hale of the Indians has also had 12 home runs. These following men have had 11 home runs: Collins of the Cardinals, Mize of the Cardinals, Lazare of the Yanks, Cool of the Senators, and Simmons of the Tigers. And now I see that Hal Totten is ready, and we'll go back to Comiskey Park to the baseball game brought to you by permission of the Chicago White Sox and the Boston Red Sox to stimulate interest in our national game and in your local team. Take it, Hal.
Back at the ballpark, ladies and gentlemen, for the first game of today's doubleheader between the White Sox and the Red Sox. Chicago and New York bearing down to try to find out what's going to happen in this series, because each team has won one game so far. The teams have just taken the field for the start of this ball game, and Sugar Keane, another former member of the Athletics, is out there going through his warm-up, finishing off with Luke Sewell, as Dusty Cook stands down there at the plate to start the game off. Shooter's a right-hander, as I think you well remember. Soon throws the ball out to second base, which means that the warm-up is over. And Dusty Cook, the Red Sox right fielder, a left-handed hitter, steps up there to the plate to start things off in the first game. Have I got Chicago, New York, George? Well, we'll make it Boston. I'm sorry I slipped up on that. But we had another doubleheader last week, I believe. Rather a violent one. King winds up and throws the first pitch, and it's a strike over the inside corner, just about knee high. The hitter let it go by. One strike on Cook. And he swings the next one to foul it down against the far end of the Sox dugout, and it bounds on down the line, and somebody comes running out of the stands to grab it as it rolls down there in front of the canvas. So it's two strikes on Cook. Two strikes to count. Kane standing there getting his sign again. Starts to wind up. Throws, and the hitter takes it wide and low for ball one, and the count is one ball and one strike. One and one on Cook. A one and two. I'm trying to do two things at once here, and it doesn't seem to be working out today. George, I guess I better do some concentrating instead. And there's the next one for ball two, so he got him even up anyway. Two balls and two strikes on Cook. Kane again starts to wind up pitches, and Dusty takes it inside across the way for ball three. Had two strikes on him, but now he's run the count to three and two. Kane stands there, rubbing up that ball a little, finally starts his wind-up. Pitches. Cook swings in a bounder out to the left of Appling, who gets it nicely, throws to first, and Dusty is out for the first out in the first inning. One out of the first inning for the Red Sox, and Roger Kramer, the Boston center fielder, is at bat. Signs, starts his windup, and throws, and the hitter swings in one hard out to right field, but Haas is jogging over easily and makes the catch nicely for the second out. Just ran three or four long strides to his left, and then stood and waited. And that brings Heinie Menush, the Husky left-handed hitting left fielder of the Red Sox. Kane on the slab, getting his sign. Pitch the first one, winds up, pitches, and it's a wide one across the waist for ball one. Kane has the sign again, winds up, and pitches, and the hitter swings, hit a high fly into left field. Left fielder Haas is just walking over to that one, and finally jogs two short steps and makes the catch easily for the third out, ending the first half of the first inning. No runs and no hits for Boston. And the score is nothing to nothing as the White Sox come to bat in the last half of the first inning. Rip Radcliffe, left fielder and leadoff man, naturally the first man up. Jack Russell, who is pitching this ball game for the Red Sox, the right-hander who many years ago was with the Red Sox. He did a lot of good pitching for them. Finally was shifted to Cleveland and then to Washington, and at Washington he did some mighty fine work. Finally ended up by waivers back at Boston this year and has been used mostly in relief work, although he's now starting this ball game as a relief pitcher. He set up quite a record back in Washington's pennant winning year, 1934, correct? I believe that's right. 33 it was. 35 was the Cubs. 34 was the Cardinal series with Detroit. It was 1-33. In that year, he did a lot of very fine relief pitching for the Cubs. Radcliffe is up there at the plate. Stocky little left-handed hitter. time the pitcher out there gets ready to throw the first one to him. Has quite a bit of trouble seemingly to get that ground in shape for his pitching stride. Finally seems to have it ready and pitches the first one for a strike over the outside corner, a little above the knee. One strike on Radcliffe. The next one is wide and low for ball one, so the count is 1-1. One ball and one strike. Hits the next one, a slow one that is fouled down the first baseline. Tried to pull that one to right, but he topped it in a rolled foul and is fielded by Fox. Goes on around the infield. One and two. Russell stands out there again, studying that ground just in front of the slab. Spent a lot of time kicking that into shape. But finally starts to wind up again, throws, and Rip swings at a slow bounder out to the second baseman. He grabs it, throws to first, and Radcliffe is out for the first out in the first inning, bringing Mike Pivich, White Sox center fielder, to bat. Cocky little right-handed hitter. Russell waits around out there while they move the center fielder back and forth a little bit, finally getting him stationed pretty well over in center. He'd moved around toward left center, and Jack starts to wind up, throws, and the hitter fouls the ball into the stand to the right of the plate, and it's strike one on Kreevich. One strike to count. Russell takes quite a while out there. He studies every pitch carefully. Now he's winding up again and throws. He got the ball inside a little bit, down around the waist, and it's 1-1. One ball and one strike. One and one with the pitcher ready. Once more, he's winding up, throws, and Pivich gets the second ball. It misses the outside corner across the waist, so it's two balls and one strike on Mike. Throws once more, and it's a slow one that floats over the outside corner waist high for the second strike. Hitter stood there and waited and seemed hesitant about making up his mind to go after that cripple. Finally decided to let it go by, and it's 2-2. Two balls and two strikes. He swings again to foul this one on the ground to the left of the plate. It's still two balls and two strikes on Kreevich. Two and two. Russell walks out back of the mound to use the rosin bag. Now he's getting ready once again. Winds up, pitches, and Mike swings it a high fly, going foul down the right field line. And Fox goes after it, but it drops just in the first tier of boxes out of his reach, down back to first base, and it's still two balls and two strikes. Getting his sign again. Starts to wind up once more. Pitches. And Mike swings it a high fly down the left field line. Left field is coming over fast. And it drops just outside the foul line for a foul ball. And it's still two balls and two strikes on Peter. Russell's walking around in a circle out in the grass back of the pitcher's mound again, rubbing up that ball. And Kreevich finally arrives back at the plate. He put the binoculars on him now, see what they look like. Russell finally walks back up on the slab, has the sign, he's winding up. Pitches, And there's the third strike, a beauty right down the middle, waist high. Hank Pavich is called out on strike for the second out in the first inning. Mike let a good one go by that time. Oh, that's the way to watch him, George. I had the binoculars on that plate. Just wasn't watching the progress of the ball at all. Just watched the plate. He came right smack down the middle that time. Right down the middle. And so it's two out in the first inning, and Mule Hunt is at bat. Mule hits the first ball pitch, a slow hopper past the pitcher. Croner gets it near second base, throws the first, and it's three outs. No runs, no hits in the first inning for the White Sox. And the score is still nothing to nothing between the White Sox and Boston Red Sox at the end of the first inning of the first game. Does your car tend to heat up, slow and sluggish in heavy traffic? Lots of times the cause is in the motor oil you're using. Oil does more than lubricate. It must seal the pistons and rings in the cylinders if you get to get full power. Play safe. Use new Texaco motor oil and be sure. Bit of a hand as Jimmy Fox comes up there to the plate. To start the second inning. Jimmy Fox is back for the Red Sox to start the second inning. Stops down there at the plate and takes off one of his shoes. Apparently some pebbles have gotten into it. And now he's putting it back on and lacing it up. Meantime, Kane stands talking to Appling, who is rubbing up the ball for him. Fox finally gets to his feet, steps up to the plate. Deck right up in front of us, a little to our right, and it's strike one. One strike is the count. Winds up again, pitches the hitter, hits a beauty down the left field line, just inside the foul line for a long base hit. Ball caroms off the front of the canvas. Radcliffe gets it and throws it across to Appling, halfway between second and third, so Lou could relay it in any direction. And it's a double down the left field line, a well-hit ball just inside the foul line by Jimmy Fox. Putting him on second base, nobody out in the second inning. And Croner, Johnny Croner, the second baseman, another right-handed hitter, is up there at the plate. Hitter swings and fouls the first one back to the screen for strike one. One strike to count. He throws again and it's ball one wide, and so the count is one ball and one strike. It's the next one to drive to right field. Haas is racing back. Pretty well makes the catch. Fox is going to third base after the catch. A very fine throw comes over, but it isn't going to get there in time, so Dykes yells to Appling to cut it off, which he does. So on Croner's long fly to Haas in right field, Fox goes to third base, and he's on third base with one out of the second inning, and Joe Cronin, the Red Sox manager and shortstop, is at bat. Cronin up there, pitcher out there, gets his sign, starts his windup, and throws, and the hitter takes it inside and low for ball one. One ball called. Kane winds up, throws again, he swings and fouls the ball out in front of the plate, bounds up and hits him as he starts out of the batter's box and rolls out into the infield. So it's a foul and a strike, and the count is one ball and one strike on Cronin. One and one the count. Watching out there again That's the sign. He's winding up. And throws him, hitter swings, hitter bound to righty. And we're in his trap box between third and home. Dyke has the ball, throws it into Sewell. And Sewell throws the ball, and the runner slides back safely. Sewell held it too slowly, and when he threw it to second, or to third, to Appling, the runner slid in safely. It was a very poorly made play, in which they should have had the man out easily. But in running him back to third base, Sewell ran him back so far that he had slid in and was practically at the base before he threw the ball to Appling, and then he threw high. So Luke didn't have a chance to get it. It's a fielder's choice for Conan. And let him get all the way to second base. And then Fox got back to third safely. And as a result, the Red Sox have runners on second and third with only one out in the second inning. And Bill Werber, the third baseman, is at bat. Two out there and a man on not farther than second base. Kane winds up, throws, and Werber takes the ball. It's over the plate, the blow, and it's ball one. Now they decide to walk Werber on purpose. Take a chance on Moberg coming up next with fourth place possible. Pitch one bad one to him, then they decided to give him his base on ball to fill the bases. And here comes the fourth ball. And Werber gets the base on balls. He shots down first base. And so the Red Sox have the bases full in the second inning with only one out. And Berg, Mo Berg, is at bat. Kane stands there getting a sign. Pitch first one to Mo. Starts his wind up. And pitches, and Berg takes the ball. It's a curve ball, wide and low. One ball called. Ball had plenty on it. And he swings the next one to hit a bounder down to Hayes, who flips it to Appling. He throws the first, and the double play works. The double play works. All right. Werber came into third base very, or second base very hard, trying to upset Appling. Hayes got that hard hit ball in a hurry. Whirled through perfectly to second. Appling caught the ball coming across the bag and then through to first, doubling Berg and getting out of that inning all right. Strategy worked that time in great style. And by that fine comeback, Kane pitching that double play ball perfectly to the hitter. They pulled out of an inning that looked as though it might result in scores on a play in which a runner got back to third base out of a run-up when he really should. So it's no run, one hit, two men left on base in the first half of the second inning. And the score is still nothing to nothing as the White Sox come to bat in the last half of the second, with Zeke Fenora getting a nice hand as he walks up there to the plate. Pitcher still warming up there on the mound as Fenora wakes. Swinging a couple of bats. The ball is finally thrown to second base. It's back to Russell, and Zeke steps up there to the plate to start the last half of the second inning. The throws now, and Zeke takes a fast strike over the inside corner just above the knee. Mr. Russell's got plenty on that ball out there today. One strike on Benora, pitcher winds up again, throws, and Zeke hits a long drive. Looks like it's in there, way out deep left field, and it is a home run high into the second deck by Zeke Benora. The ball mighty well hit, a home run high into the second deck of the left field stand by Benora. Gives the White Sox a 1-0 lead, and this crowd of 30,000 or more sets up a terrific shout and hand clap as he trots back across the plate and starts back to the base. And Luke Appling is at bat. Jimmy Dyke's waiting down there alongside the dugout. Turned around and kidded Zeke as he walked back and finally took a bat and gave him sort of a spank as he ducked into the dugout. And now the next one. Appling lines the ball deep into left field. The left fielder juggles the ball momentarily, but recovers it in time to throw it in to hold Appling at first base. The long single to left field by Luke, putting him on first base. With nobody out in the second inning for the Sox. One run home as a result of Manura's home run. And the next man up, Jackie Hayes. Jackie Hayes, White Sox second baseman up there. Ready now to pitch the first one that Jackie throws, and they called for a pitch out, apparently thinking that the hit and run was on, or possibly a bunt. They called for a pitch out, and Potts stayed right at first base, but seeing where the ball was going and where the catcher was leaping to get it, Appling didn't move off the bat. Russell still watching first, pitches again, and it's a strike over the heart of the plate above the knees to make it 1-1. One ball and one strike on Hayes. One and one to count. Russell turns and throws the first. Appling had just started to take his lean towards second. And had to swing all the way around to get back to first base, but he did it all right. Ciretti faces the plate and pitches, and a hitter fouls this one back to the screen. It's still 1-2. One ball and two strikes on Jackie Hayes. Ciretti again walks out onto the grass back to the mound to consult the rosin bag. Ties his fingers, comes back, wiping them off on his shirt front, and then takes his place on the slab, ready to pitch again to Jackie Hayes. Swings around on the slab. And pitches, and the hitter takes it high and inside for ball one. Or ball two, rather. The count is two balls and two strikes. 2-2 the count. Inside the foul line, hits the canvas, bounce back in. The runner is pulling up at second base, and the left fielder gets the ball and throws it into third. Well hit, and wasn't fair by more than 2 inches. But it was fair enough, so there was no squawk or complaint from the Red Sox players. A mighty well hit ball on a hit run play down the left field line for two bases by Jackie Hayes, scoring Appling from first base. Jackie himself is on second now. Nobody out. 2 runs home in the second inning. White Sox now leading Boston 2-0. And the Red Sox are starting to warm up another pitcher in the right field bullpen. Russell gets ready. Pitches, and Dyke fouls this one high into the second deck above and to the right of the plate for strike one. Used rosin bag for a moment, then walked slowly back onto the slab. Dyke's back in there at third base today after rest of nearly a week's duration, which he's already got those old tired legs of his, rested up, ready to go back in there once more. Dyke bunts the next one, and it's a bunt back to the pitcher who turns, sees that he can't get the man at third, so throws the first, and it's a perfect sacrifice. Russell to Fox by Dyke. Jimmy almost got that ball around to the right far enough to get it past Russell. He'd had it beat, but it was just within reach of Russell, who fielded it very fast, and the sacrifice moves Hayes to third base. And he's on third with one off, 2 runs home in the second inning, and Luke Sewell, the White Sox catcher, is at bat. Sewell stops to dig in there at the plate. Dig a hole, brace his right foot into the rear of the batter's box. Now faces Russell, who starts to wind up infield playing in. And the first pitch is inside across the waist for ball one. One ball called. Left side of the infield isn't quite into the grass. Right side almost into it. Russell's winding up once more. Throws. And Sewell swings to foul the ball into the sand, back into the right of the plate. Lands in the second deck. Down in front of us to our right. And it's 1-1, one ball and one strike on Sewell. One and one is the count. And the pitch is ready once more. Throws. And Sewell hits a bounder, an easy one right back at the pitcher, who gets it, throws the first after holding Appling at third, or Hayes at third base. And it's two out. And now Keene, White Sox pitcher, is at bat. Leave the pitcher warming up in the right field bullpen is Wilson. Binoculars show that 18, if I'm not mistaken. Keene now walks up to the plate. Also pitching hard here to get out of this without this other run scoring. It's on third base. He's got a pitch to the pitcher also. Winds up, throws, and Keene swings to foul the ball way back into the second deck to above and to the left of the plate. It's well flanked by ushers, but a fan manages to sneak in between them and grab it right now. The usher got it, didn't he? I thought the fan had it when he walked away. He looked as though he was holding something in his hand, but he wasn't. And the next pitch to Shug is wide for ball one, and the count is one ball and one strike. One and one. Pitch goes back to finger the rosin bag again, walks slowly back onto the slab. Gets his sign, he starts to wind up. And throws, and Shug hits the slow bounder over the pitcher's head. Cronin comes in fast, gets it, throws to first, and Keene is out by not much more than a step. For the third out, ending the second inning with two runs, three hits, one man left on base. And at the end of the second inning, the White Sox are leading the Red Sox by a score of 2-0. I wonder if all of you have yet obtained your 1936 Texaco scorebook. Especially you people who are out touring today, riding somewhere in your car when you stop for gas. I know you always look for the sign of the red star with the green T, meaning the Texaco station. So while you're in there, ask for a request card if you're in the Chicago area. And all you have to do there is to fill it out with your name and address, put a one-cent stamp on the other side because it's already addressed to me, and mail it, and you'll get this book, which contains the official blanks for 17 full games. There's room for the official summaries and all that you need, the same as we've used here in the press box for years. Full page of pictures of the Cubs and of the White Sox also with their rosters and league schedules and our complete scoring system with illustrations and explanations so that you can keep the score of these games that you see or hear and then have those games to relive from that scorebook, from a practical scoring system that we've used for many, many years, to relive those games and nights and weeks and months and years to come. Here is the pitcher, Russell, at bat, and he swings the first ball pitch to him and fouls it on the ground over to the Sox dugout for strike one. One strike on Russell. Keene rubs that ball up out there on the mound, gets ready to pitch to Jack again. Fans are getting his sign. Starts his windup. Throws, and Russell takes a strike two. It's over the inside corner about waist high. So it's two strikes on Jack. Two strikes on Russell. She winds up once more, throws, and the hitter swings to foul the ball on the ground. It rolls back into the left, back to the stands, and it's two strikes still on Jack Russell, the Red Sox pitcher at bat to start the third inning. Keene takes his time out there, getting ready to pitch. He's winding up. And throws, and the hitter starts to swing, stops. The ball hits the bat, rolls out toward the pitcher. Keene comes in, gets it, throws to first, and Russell is out for the first out in the third inning. Jack tried to stop his swing after starting for that ball. The ball met the bat rather squarely and dribbled out toward the pitcher about halfway out. Keene came in to get it and throw his man out first. So it's one out in the third inning for the Red Sox, and Dusty Cook, the Boston right fielder, is at bat.